Good evening, Truth Seekers. How you doing tonight? Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. The hearings are finally over. The confirmation hearings for Sotomayor. Did Lindsey Graham just make a total ass of himself today? This patronizing attitude of his. Oh my God! We'll have a little sound for you. Not much, just a little bit. And Jeff Sessions got an example today. Of course, it blew right past him. I'm sure he didn't even understand what the hell was going on. He thought what he said was funny. He got a lesson today in context. What it means when you say something, if it's taken out of context. We'll show that to you in a second. Oh, my goodness, we're not here. I have no idea who's calling, but I'll tell you what, not pay any attention to the telephone. Must be a bill collector, huh? Earlier this evening, not too long ago, about an hour and a half, maybe an hour ago, hour and a half ago, Barack Obama addressed the NAACP convention. It's the 100th anniversary of that organization. Now, remember, Bush declined the NAACP's invitation for 5 years. He kept saying, no, don't think so. Because George W. Bush was terrified of Negroes and he was a racist. People who are racist are usually terrified of the very people that they want to demonize. You know that. But you've got to listen to something. I was trying to figure out how to play the entire 37 minutes of his speech tonight, the speech that Barack Obama gave. Obviously, I can't do that, but you need to listen to it. You know, later tonight, tomorrow, whatever. Just go to cspan.org. That's all you have to do, cspan.org, and find the Obama speaking to the NAACP convention this evening. It starts slow. It just, it's just kind of what you would normally think a speech is going to be to an NAACP convention. But about 20 minutes into it, it starts to rock and roll. Not that the first 20 minutes aren't good. I mean, this is Barack Obama. I can't think of anybody who has been such an inspiring speaker in politics in the past half century than this guy. It's just unbelievable. Even my military affairs correspondent, Sharon, sent me an email right in the middle of it. Just said, "Are you watching this?" Whoa! So if you get a chance later this evening, tomorrow, check it out. Cspan.org, Barack Obama's speech today to the 100th anniversary convention of the NAACP. It's another one of those amazing talks. And like Sharon said, it almost makes me want to believe again. Because, you know, my military affairs correspondent's getting a little bit disillusioned too. But when you when you listen to it, man. Lindsey Graham today at the Sonia Sotomayor hearing. Actually, it was yesterday. He patronizes the hell out of this woman, who is his better on so many levels. Why bother? Why bother going down the list? But these were the two sound bites we wanted to get for you last night. As far as what he said today, I watched it today, and it was just more of the same. I've decided that his voice irritates the hell out of me, too. Now, Jeff Sessions, and now Lindsey Graham, and Zell Miller. We have something on Zell Miller for you tonight, too. But I want you to listen. This is from the hearing yesterday. Lindsey Graham, he really patronizes Sotomayor by asking about her temperament. I wonder if he didn't ask her if she was a drinker. Do you ever get drunk, Judge? Do you ever get drunk? Judge, do you ever go out bar hopping? You know, my Sotomayor is a type one. She has type 1 diabetes. And something I found out today I didn't know, if you watch the hearings, those two glasses in front of her, one had water and one had 7-Up. In case she felt a little bit lightheaded or dizzy, she would drink the 7-Up. I'm amazed that they didn't bring that up. But anyway, listen to Lindsey Graham and ask yourself if he would have asked, Sammy the Fish Alito, this line of questioning. The Republican Party really doesn't care if they lose all Hispanic voters next year. They don't give a damn. They're going to disappear anyway. Now, Graham is questioning some criticism from lawyers, we mentioned this last night, who appeared before her. And lawyers have said, oh, damn, she's a tough judge.
Do you think you have a temperament problem?
No, sir. I can only talk about what I know about my relationship with the judges of my court and with the lawyers who appear regularly from our circuit. And I believe that my reputation is such that I ask the hard questions, but I do it evenly for both sides.
In fairness to you, you know, obviously you've accomplished a lot in your life, but maybe these hearings are time for self-reflection. This is pretty tough stuff that you don't see from about other judges on the Second Circuit.
Oh, give me a damn break. This is pretty tough stuff. He's talking about the comments that we shared with you last night. Oh, she's rough. Oh, she talked funny to me. Oh, she kept picking her nose. Oh, she twists her hair. Oh, I didn't like the ruling. Oh, she said that, you know, I mean, what the hell? Well, what the hell is Lindsey Graham talking about? He said, maybe these hearings are time for self-reflection. No, he didn't say that, did he? Yeah, he did. He just told her to go examine herself and see where she might need some work. Well, Lindsey, I'll tell you what. You might do the same thing. You might do the same thing. Examine yourself and see where you might need some work. Or maybe a little more honesty than you're used to dealing with, huh? I guess we better wait on this second one. Because, well, no, I guess we have time. This is Graham once again hammering the wise Latina comment that these whitey-white neocons keep taking out of context.
Let's talk about the wise Latino comment yet again. The one thing that I've tried to impress upon you through jokes and being serious is the consequences of these words and the world in which we live in. Now, we're talking about putting you on the Supreme Court and judging your fellow citizens.
No.
And one of the things that I need to be assured of is that you understand the world as it
Stop it a second. What the hell is he talking about? Putting her on the Supreme Court and judging your fellow citizens? No, you dumbass. That's not what a Supreme Court justice does. A Supreme Court justice rules on the constitutionality of a law. We've been talking for a week about these dumbass white boys, and you would think, wouldn't you, that Lindsey Graham, who is still with the Judge Advocate General's office, he is still a military prosecutor, that he would understand that a Supreme Court justice listens to points of constitutional law, and that's all. They do not pass judgment on their fellow Americans, for God's sake. Can you believe that? All right, we'll play the start it over and play the rest of it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy, ready to launch again tonight.
Yes, hippies like me. Tree-hugging, love-making, pro-choice and gay wedding. Widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded. Protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jails by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American males. Diamonds and dogs, boys.
Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st, 09. See dealer for details.
Touch this.
21 past the hour. All right, let's go back to Lindsey Graham. You know, he says I've tried to impress upon you through jokes. Because what, Lindsey? Because she's got a female brain and she can't understand just straight up conversation. He sounds like he's addressing a child about the consequences of her words. And he says, and one of the things that I need to be assured of is that you understand the world as it pretty much really is. This is coming from Lindsey Graham? Well, you know, she's such a dumb, hot-tempered, non-white female and probably doesn't understand much about the world and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Let's try it again. Here is this half-witted Lindsey Graham who ought to practice a little bit more honesty himself, if you know what I mean.
Let's talk about the wise Latino comment yet again. The one thing that I've tried to impress upon you through jokes and being serious is the consequences of these words and the world in which we live in. You know, we're talking about putting you on the Supreme Court and judging your fellow citizens. And one of the things that I need to be assured of is that you understand the world as it pretty much really is. I can't find the quote, but I'll find it here in a moment. A wise Latino quote. Do you remember it?
Yes.
Okay, say it to me.
Oh, my God.
Can you recite it from memory?
You get a little dance for me while you're doing it?
I would hope that a wise Latino woman,
Jesus,
with the richness of her experience, would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male.
That's not all of it.
Do you understand, ma'am, that if I had said anything like that...
You dumb bastard.
And my reasoning was that I'm trying to inspire somebody, they would have had my head. Do you understand that?
You understand
I do understand how those words could be taken that way, particularly if read in isolation.
Right, if read in isolation, and that's the whole point. I'm so sick of that. You know, the Republican Party put its entire operational team to work, to find something, anything that these son of a bitches could hammer on during the entire period of her, you know, these preliminaries leading up to the hearings and including the hearings, her confirmation, I'm sorry, anything that they could come up with. And they landed on this. Out of how many years she'd been a judge? 14, 15, 16 years or something? Out of everything. This is the only thing they could come up with. The only thing. And every one of these sons of bitches, these white males, have taken this and run with it like their crotches were on fire. Have you noticed that? They're just running around like their drawers are on fire. Huh? Everybody from the Pigman Limbaugh to Lindsey Graham, who ought to be a little bit more honest about things, who are these? Who is it? Tom Coburn, that freak, and Mushmouth. What's his name? Jeff Sessions and the Mormon and all these. You know, I mean, Jesus God, that's all they could talk about. And here sits this candidate for the Supreme Court, listening to this over and over and over, explaining it over and over. And if you notice this, the quotation has gotten shorter and shorter until they not only did they take it out of context, these white boys, not only did they take it out of context, but they took away the kind of qualifiers at the beginning and the end of the statement. She was talking about a specific case. That's gone. That's so far down the memory hole, that doesn't even exist anymore. What an outrage. These cowardly little twits. I swear to God, I'm so sick of white people, I could just scream. All right, I know you're one. Well, actually, wait a minute, let me look in the mirror. Yeah, ah, damn, I still am too. But you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. There's times when you can be embarrassed for your own race. I've had black folk tell me that. I've had Latinos tell me that. I damn sure have felt that watching these white men put this qualified candidate for the Supreme Court through what they put her through. They didn't, what'd they question her about? Abortion and guns and wise Latina. I'll be damned. Are you hot tempered? Huh? You eat them old chilies? Do you? You have to do some splaining. Goddamn mocking freaks. Unbelievable. And it's been going on all this week and prior to this week. And what's that turd Inhofe who said, I don't have to listen to these hearings. I've already made up my mind. She doesn't have to come and visit me. I'm not voting for her. Was it Inhofe? These people make me sick. They just make me so sick. All right, we're going to give you an example of how important context is when we come back. Courtesy of Jeff Cornmeal Mouth Session. Stick around. Stick around, y'all. Stick around. Are you qualified to stick around? Are you hot-tempered enough to stick around?
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. So today, talking about context, they have just attempted to strip the skin off of Sotomayor's bones with this wise Latina comment. This is so typically Republican when they latch on to something like this and then turn it into, well, she's a racist. We're going to put a racist on the Supreme Court and a terrorist. She's a terrorist and a racist. Remember what they said about Barack Obama? I mean, son of a bitch. The Republicans are bankrupt. I said earlier this year, Republican Party needs to be taken to the nearest city dump and murdered. Just kill the damn thing. It is stinking. It is vile. It is anti-American. And I think every one of these right-wing talk show hosts should be absolutely fired. Just kick their asses off the air. They are adding nothing to the development of this country, to the betterment of this country, to the mental health of this country. Nothing. They are toxic demons. They should just be removed. I mean, in a normal society, they wouldn't be there. They just wouldn't be there. But we're not normal. So Jeff Sessions simultaneously shocked and cracked up the hearings today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said, well, have you got that queued up, Jeff Sessions? You ready? Let me see here. Okay. He's talking to Wade Henderson, who is the president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. Listen to what Jeff Sessions says.
Mr. Attorney General, thank you for your able comments. And Mr. Henderson, it's good to work with you. Senator Leahy and I are talking during these hearings. We're going to do that crack cocaine thing that you and I have talked about before. We got to.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it.
I want to restate that.
You may want to be. Let me correct the record.
Please rephrase it, Senator. Please rephrase.
I misspoke.
No, quite all right.
We're going to reduce the burden of penalties in some of the crack cocaine cases and make them fair.
You ignorant little snotty Beauregard son of a bitch, you. I mean, you know, you say something like that because you're a freak and a fool, Mr. Sessions. And right, oh, I misspoke. Excuse me. I didn't mean to say that. Ooh, ooh, ah, ee, ooh. But you see, Senator Beauregard, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, do you see how something taken out of context, even from a fool like you, how bad it can sound to normal folk? Now, if you take something out of context that Sotomayor said, that was perfectly legitimate, and then run with it the way you white dogs have done. Did it register? Now, you could tell looking at Jeff Sessions' face, it didn't register at all. He thought he was cute. He just sits here with that little old tight lip look on his face. Did I say something funny? I did say something funny. I'll be damned. I said something funny. Hey, Chairman Leahy, I said something funny, didn't I? Play that again. I just want to hear this again, because what we ought to do, Kathy, is cut out that little bit about we're going to do that crack cocaine thing that you and I have been talked about before. I think I want to cut that out. And every time this twisted little twerp opens his mouth for the rest of his political career, we need to play that. Go ahead, play it again for me, will you?
Thank you for your able comments. And Mr. Henderson, it's good to work with you. Senator Leahy and I are talking during these hearings. We're going to do that crack cocaine thing that you and I have talked about before.
We're going to do that crack cocaine thing that you and I have talked about before. We're going to do that crack cocaine. Well, you're a goddamn drug user, aren't you, Jeff? You're a drug user. You're a coke user. You just said it. What? You took it out of context? Nah, you just said it.
I'd like Lindsey Graham to get him on the stand and say do you understand what the consequences
of doing
of
crack
words?
Cocaine
do,
is?
Do you understand in the if I had made those comments, if I had said that, you know, they would have had my head. Do you understand me?
Yeah, well, that would be fun. If Jeff Sessions ever gets nominated to the United States Supreme Court. I misspoke, Sessions said. Let me correct the record. And then he stops. If you saw the video, he stops. And he gets that little old, I don't know, that 5-year-old. And I swear to God, so many... here I go again. I understand. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. So many members of the House and the Senate, not just these dumbass white Southern boys, but so many of these senators and representatives, the males, when they say something or they do something, they act like children. Have you noticed that? Like they are, for the most part, so many of them. I'm not talking about all of them, but probably the majority. Seem like they're developmentally stopped somewhere around 12. And they get that kind of silly, pre-adolescent look on their face, and they say stupid, pre-adolescent comments about, so have you noticed that? I mean, it's not just me. You've noticed that, haven't you? It just seems like, the white ones, are more apt to do that because they feel that they can do that and get away with it. You get a black member of the House. There aren't any black senators, are there? I don't think so. You get a black member of the House, and you're not going to hear those kinds of statements because if a black representative, male or female, starts to say something and the brain clicks and they go, oops, can't say that because if I do, I know it's going to happen, and they'll stop themselves. And I have yet to see a black representative in the context of their time on the floor. I'm not talking about, they're black criminals in the House just like they're white criminals. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this use of language and these little boy expressions that these white folks use. I don't see the black folks doing that, but I see the white folks doing that. And I guess that's one of the privileges of race. You can do that if you're white. You can say stupid, dumbass things. Can you imagine if Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. would have said what Beauregard said. Can you imagine how fast that would be all over this scum-sucking toilet website, Free Republic? How quickly the twit Hannity or the pig man would have grabbed that statement and just, you know what I'm talking about. Look what they did with Barack Obama, because he sat on the board, the same board as William Ayers. All of a sudden, that made Barack Obama, he's consorting with terrorists. He has breakfast with terrorists. He goes drinking with terrorists. God only knows what they do when nobody's around. Good Lord. Remember that? So here's Beauregard. Yeah, we need to do that. And hear all those, did you hear all the people all of a sudden start yelling, wait, no, you gotta say that again, wait, blah, 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 that's not what you meant, say it again. Huh? Did I say something funny? Oh, damn, I said something funny. It was about drugs, wasn't it? Oh, funny, isn't that funny? Jesus God. And then we have former governor of Georgia and former U.S. Senator Zell Miller. The thing that gets me about Zell, I knew him back in the 70s when he was lieutenant governor here for, I don't know, since God was a teenager, and he finally decided to run for governor. This is back when he was sane. And I was writing for the Atlanta Gazette. I was a columnist for the Atlanta Gazette. And I went to a fundraiser for Zell Miller. And when was it? 76, 77? And in that room, that fundraiser, up on the stage, they had a country band. And then they had a soul band. And there were black people in this room. There were white people in the room. There were black politicians and white politicians. There were good old boys and there were, black good old boys. And I was impressed. I thought, I'll be damned. Here's one of those white, southern, Christian, politicians who's a populist and reaches out and is responded to across the color line. I mean, looky here. And I was really impressed. And I wrote this, Hunter Thompson style column. And I got a letter from him. He was lieutenant governor then. I got a letter from him at the newspaper about a week later. And he said it was the best column he'd ever had written for him. And reminded of Hunter Thompson. And, come on down the office. I hadn't met him yet. He said, come on down the office. I'd like to shake your hand, meet you. And I did. And I got to know him a little bit. Got to know his son, Murphy. Got to hang out. Used to go to, I took Kathy years later to a party up at Murphy Miller's up in the mountains, and you know, I was just real impressed with him. But then he went insane. You know, sometimes I'm so carefree with a joyless heart. And sometimes I get it seems all I have is worry.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
So all that talk about Zell Miller, the reason I bring that up is about my relationship with him, because I remember one of the things I wrote in the column is that he very much was like a southern Bobby Kennedy, because he was a populist. He was from the North Georgia Mountains. He really did talk like he had a mouthful of wood chips, but he had an appeal to across the racial spectrum. And I don't know what's happened to him. I really don't. He seemed to have gone just completely crazy. There is something about living up in, he's from Young Harris, Georgia, which is right up near the North Carolina line. And it's not even a town, really. It's kind of a crossroads. But, you know, one of the things that's true about people who live kind of isolated back up in mountain hollows and places is they can get, in the South, they say he can get funny. He gets funny. And they don't mean funny, ha-ha. They mean funny like, oh, I don't know, biting heads off of live rabbits or something, that kind of funny. And Zell seems to have just lost it completely. Remember when he challenged, what's his name, Chris Matthews, to a duel? I mean, that's not a rational human being. Well, he was addressing a group of Republican lawmakers today. And I think it was here in Georgia, I believe. Yeah, let me see where it is. In Atlanta. And also remember, he took the podium of the 2004 Republican National Convention and accused the Democratic Party of being soft on national security. Right. You pisser. Soft on national security. There hasn't been a president soft on national security since Eisenhower. Jesus God, 60% of the disposable income that the government disposes goes into weapons building, Zell. But that's, you know, that's like, we won't let the queers get married, and we are going to stop abortions, not because we're against abortions, but them damn womans, you know, who can make them decisions on their own. We can't stand that. No, hell no. And we're also going to fix up national security, and we're going to stop President Obama from coming after your guns, just like we stopped, Al Gore from coming after your guns, too. We did, didn't we, huh? You see that? Chuckle-headed freaks. So anyway, Miller today was criticizing Obama's recent travels overseas. I mean, you're not supposed to do that, but he's the president, Zell. Oh, I don't know. And he told these Republicans that the White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, needs to put Gorilla Glue on Barack Obama's chair so that it'll paste his ass to the chair and it'll keep him in the Oval Office. He added, our globe-trotting president needs to stop and take a break and quit gallivanting around. Gallivanting around. How's that word? You like that word? Gallivanting. Now, Gorilla Adhesive, Gorilla Glue, that's a brand name. There is actually a product called Gorilla Glue. But, and of course, it was just simply mere happenstance that Zell Miller used. He didn't say LePage's glue or Elmer's glue or, what's some more, Kathy? We've got a five-year-old or almost five-year-old. What is the glue that she uses? You know, super glue. No, it's got to be Gorilla Glue. Gorilla Glue. State Representative here in Georgia, Democratic State Representative Tyrone Brooks, who I also know, who leads the Georgia Association of Black Elected Officials, said he wasn't bothered by Miller's comment. He said, but it came a few years too late. Tyrone Brooks said, quote, it would have been much more appropriate that he suggested Karl Rove use some Gorilla Glue on George Bush and Dick Cheney, end quote. My God. Well, the thing about Zell Miller, he went against the tide at one time in his political and personal life. He, when he was governor, two terms, he won praise from Georgia's black leaders because he appointed minorities, so-called, to high-ranking positions, including Leah Ward Sears, who wound up being the first black female to serve as the chief judge of any state's top court, any state in the country. Leah Ward Sears, she was the state Supreme Court Chief Justice here. She was appointed by Zell Miller. So it's just astonishing to me what has happened to poor old Zell. Folks used to, including me, used to think that he represented kind of a Huey Long streak of populism without the racism. That's what we thought. Gorilla glue. Well, I reckon it was just a slip of the tongue, right? Right. Just a slip of the tongue. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico says the great irony in Sotomayor's nomination is that she's a fairly conservative judge and was first nominated to the federal bench by George Herbert Walker Bush. You know, the dude that nominated Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court? Oh, well. Oh, well. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. The space agency, NASA, launched Apollo 11, the first manned landing on the moon, on this date, 40 years ago. It landed 4 days later on July 20th. And if you remember that, if you're of a certain age, you do remember it. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin with Michael Collins orbiting above. 1969 was one hell of a year, wasn't it? A little research. 1969 was the New York Jets' historic Super Bowl victory. Richard Nixon's inauguration. Punk music started in 69, the first Led Zeppelin tour, publication of The Godfather, the release of the movie Easy Rider, the Santa Barbara oil spill, the Cuyahoga River fire in downtown Cleveland, the Battle of Hamburger Hill in Vietnam, Stonewall riots in New York, the moon landing, of course, the Chappaquiddick incident with Ted Kennedy, Woodstock, the Manson family murders, the Zodiac killer murders, the, what else? Birth of the Weathermen faction of Students for Democratic Society, the so-called Days of Rage, Alcatraz occupation, the murder of Fred Hampton, and Altamont, the free concert that resulted in, what, one person dying? Being stabbed to death by Hell's Angels, beaten to death, whatever. 69 was a hell of a year, wasn't it? 68 was pretty intense, too. Man, 68 and 69. Anyway, 40 years ago today, the Apollo 11 launched. And I remember thinking at the time, I can't believe that it's been 40 years. But I remember thinking at the time, wow, this is it. In my lifetime, I'm going to see factories on the moon, you know, laboratories, I should say. I'm going to see launches from the moon to get to Mars. That's about as far as it went, because I thought the whole thing was just so space. I don't know. 2001 came out, the movie. That was 69 too, wasn't it? Or was that 68? I thought we were on the cusp of something incredible, because I remember Kennedy's speech when he said that we would get to the moon in this decade, the 60s, and we did. Of course, he didn't live to see it by any means, but it, you know, it happened. And of course, you know, you start thinking, gee, if we were able to do that with the dedication, and you know, you have more computing power in your cell phone now than NASA had in 1969, when these guys went for the moon. You realize that, don't you? You have more computing power, especially if you have an iPhone of some sort, than, you know, when I look at the old clips, the old television clips, when there was a problem, like with Apollo 13, they, what did the scientists do? They immediately whip out their slide rules. And there's slide rules to try to figure out how to fix the problem. Astonishing. We certainly have come a long way since 1969, haven't we? You remember what you were doing when Apollo 11 launched? And then 4 days later, of course, the landing. And the thing is, there's a movement in this country, has been around for a long time. I shouldn't say it's a movement. It's a collection of freaks and geeks and morons who insist that the moon landing was fake, that it was, you know, it never happened. None of the moon landings ever happened, because there were a couple, weren't there? But how can this country produce that kind of moron who says, well, the moon landing never happened. That was just to impress the Russians. Jesus.
Did it work?
Yeah, did it work? The Obama administration is starting to fire back at some of these right-wing morons in the Senate, which is good. Senator John Kyle of Arizona, and you folks listening, are we on Phoenix KPHX? Are we? We are. We don't get any calls from Phoenix. Are you sure we're on? Oh, we did. I think we picked up or soon picking up an Albuquerque station too, right? But John Kyle, senator from Arizona, the other senator from Arizona. Well, here's the story. The Obama administration is turning up the heat on this guy. The White House yesterday released letters from four, count them, four cabinet secretaries, letters that went to Arizona Governor Jan Brewer. She replaced Napolitano. Napolitano was a Democrat. Brewer is a Republican. And the letters cited John Kyle's comments, and the letters outlined, there were four, from the four secretaries of transportation, housing, and interior, because it involved Indian education and other projects in Kyle's home state. And these four cabinet secretaries said, well, you know, these programs, Governor Brewer, are going to be eliminated if your boy Kyle has his way. Kyle is the number two Senate Republican leader, and he said the stimulus spending hasn't succeeded in boosting the economy, that it's adding to the deficit. Well, there's a brilliant statement. And he suggested on his Senate website that, and in interviews, that spending not already allocated should be halted. So Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood, one of two Republicans in Obama's cabinet, made no attempt to conceal his kind of contempt for Kyle. LaHood wrote to the governor of Arizona, Senator Kyle, quote, publicly questioned whether the stimulus is working and stated that he wants to cancel projects that aren't presently underway. If you prefer to forfeit the money we're making available to your state, as Senator Kyle suggests, please let me know, end quote. And LaHood noted in the letter that at least $500 million of the $48 billion allocated for transportation projects under the Economic Recovery Act are intended for Arizona projects, including transit projects in Phoenix. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said Arizona would lose $45 million for 500 single-family housing loans if projects not already underway were canceled. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Sean Donovan said the state, Arizona, would forfeit $73 million. His department oversees, including $22 million for homeless programs. Of course, Kyle doesn't care about that. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, a Westerner who used to serve with Kyle in the Senate, didn't mention Kyle by name in his letter, but he referred to some key Republican leaders in Congress, and he said that the state would lose $60 million for Bureau of Indian Affairs education and schooling, among other money. You know, this is just like this freak over here in South Carolina before he got caught with his private parts caught in another woman's zipper, kind of stuck there. Ow, 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 help, help. No, don't help. No, la, la, la. You know, these guys crack me up. Even our chuckle-headed governor here in Georgia made some kind of remarks early on. Well, we're not going to accept any of that there stimulus money. The hell you're not. The hell you're not. You show me a politician who won't accept money from anybody. Most of them don't give a damn who it comes from. But this is taxpayer money. So John Kyle was going to say no, and I think the Obama administration is doing the right thing. Just fire back at these half-wits. Just fire back at them. Just say, okay, you don't want the money for NIDA projects in your state. And the bloody fact is they don't. They couldn't care less. John Kyle, Sanford over here, these Republican governors, they don't care. They don't care how badly the citizens of their state are hurting. They don't care about unemployment. They don't care about lack of medical care. They don't care what happens to children, school lunch programs, nothing. They don't give a tinker's damn. I hate them. Have I mentioned that yet tonight, how much I hate these people? That what you thought love was for. Maybe I'll Pontiac Summer Closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st. See dealer for details. It is 22 past the hour. Want to do some phone calls? Okay. Damien is calling from Seattle. Hey, Damien.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm doing all right this evening.
Good.
I'm working late, and I was listening to the podcast from a few nights ago.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, well, you know, they don't see you live here, so I'm going to just try at random and see if I can get through. I can't call you from home because I don't have a cell phone.
Yeah.
The line would be too bad.
Right.
But I just wanted to thank you for what you do. You know, I met you last year at the AM 1090 Seattle Town Hall Forum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was an awesome experience. I have a couple great pictures of you and me up on my Mike Malloy podcast subscription membership website.
Well, I'll be damned.
Page, and I just, you are inspirational to some of us that are, you know, a little bit younger. But, you know, we weren't around for some of the 60s, 70s, some of the awakening awareness.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But, you know, I'm very grateful every day when I get a chance to sit down and listen to you.
Well, that's very kind to say, Damien. I appreciate it.
And you know, I have a whole range of people. You know, one of my coworkers, Russ, he's one of the hugest fans of yours that there is. So huge shout out to him. But I also wanted to just bring up that you introduced me to Zeitgeist.
Oh, yeah, the movie?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I just have to say that was life-changing. It really was.
Well, good. I think the intent, the person who sent it to me, the intent was to, first of all, to give me a little bit of education, but also to make me reevaluate some of the things that I thought I knew, and it turns out I really didn't. The Zeitgeist addendum. I'm not sure which one it was. The one that exposes Christianity for what it is, I thought
that's
was
the first one.
That was very interesting. I've gone that route before. You know, I know that there are about 20 or 30 religions at various times in the history of the human race that have used exactly the same myths and superstitions that you find in Christianity. But the bit about the Federal Reserve and the bit about debt and so on and so on and so on, it was an eye-opener. It surely was.
Yeah, in a major way. And, you know, I even, that first part of the first one with the whole Christianity thing that you just mentioned.
Uh-huh.
I had some missionaries visit my house, and they wanted to show me a video.
Yeah.
And I told them that if I would watch their video, if they would watch one of mine. So I played them that first part of Zeitgeist. And needless to say, one of them left the house in tears, and the other one followed shortly thereafter to calm down.
You're kidding me.
No. I kind of feel bad because I used to be in their church.
But, yeah.
But it just is that powerful.
Yeah.
If people just know, they get a clue, you know.
Yeah, it can be eye opening, life changing, or none of the above. But
I went so far as to get the CDs. You can buy them for like $5 from their site, and they're open copyright, so you can make all the copies you want.
Right.
I made 100 copies of each one, and I've been distributing them amongst family and friends.
And wow!
At first, you know, I'm from Wyoming, and some of my very conservative relatives. Crazy comet talk, what the hell are you trying to pull? You know, but when they actually, it's like, just calm down. Calm down. Just watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, Jesus, Mary, Mother of Mercy.
Well, if you can get them to sit down and just watch, sometimes it's amazing what the result you can get. Hey, Damien, thanks, man. You know, we're doing another town hall meeting August 8th.
I already got tickets.
You got tickets? Great. Well, I'm
front and center, front row, very center.
I'll be damned. Well, I'll see you there then.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, Damien. Take care. Thanks for checking in. Ah. Yeah, the event that Damien's talking about, I've mentioned it a couple of times, August 8th in Seattle, well, just outside Seattle, the fourth annual AM 1090 Town Hall Forum. It'll include Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Bill Press, Ron Reagan, and me on the panel, and the discussion will be moderated by David Postman, who's a former chief political writer for the Seattle Times. You can get tickets and all sorts of information. Just go to am1090seattle.com. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Dreaming with Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Michael's in the Bronx, listening on Sirius. Hey, Michael.
Oh, I can't hear you, Mike.
You can't hear me at all? Oops. What's happening here? Are you there? Okay, we'll try it again. Have we got more audio problems with our damn telephones? Sorry about that. What do you think? We going to be able to take any calls tonight? Yeah? All right. If you're on hold there when that just went nuts, you can call in again. We'll try it again. Our military affairs correspondent Sharon Gordy sent me this article from Salon.com. The Army is denying that combat stress is causing homicides back home here, or one would assume suicides. According to an Army study that was released yesterday, the combat in Iraq, including the war crimes that were witnessed by soldiers, and in some instances probably participated in by soldiers, contributed to a series of brutal murders by soldiers based at the at Fort Carson after they returned home. According to this Army study released yesterday, many of the findings in the study, which was announced by a senior Army brass at a press conference on the Post, mirrors what was reported in Salon's Coming Home series. According to the report, though, it says survey data from this investigation suggests a possible association between increasing levels of combat exposure and risk for negative behavioral outcomes. The study also says that, quote, combat intensity or exposure may have increased the risk for violent behaviors. And that, quote, its findings are consistent with recent research on combat exposure and subsequent behavior among soldiers. Now, the report seems to confirm, not deny, the idea that the battle stress can result in murder back home. I don't think you need to be in the military to understand that, right? Now, the Army officials presenting the report denied that it established any cause and effect relationship. The Army Surgeon General, Eric Shoemaker, dismissed the notion that the report proved a tie between soldier-involved killings and the horrors those soldiers experienced in the war. I mean, what does that mean? They have a report that links the two situations. Hideous conditions of murder and mayhem in Iraq and homicides back stateside. They have the evidence linking it, and the Army Surgeon General says there is no evidence linking it. I don't know. It's just unbelievable. This sounds like a typical Army or a U.S. military response. They assign people within the military to do investigation, and they do the investigation, and they find, oh my God, there's a link between what these soldiers who are already stressed out, they may be on their second or third deployment, what they're involved in combat in Iraq. Some of the stuff they've seen, these are young kids, for the most part, they really are. And if they're not young kids, they're certainly young, I don't mean to make it sound like they're 12-year-olds, but you know what I'm saying. Somebody's 19, 20, 21, That's a kid to me. They may be able to go kill, and they may be able to drink and smoke and be killed, but they're still kids. Come on. Up to people in their 30s and their 40s. When and some of the older guys are guys with families, the younger ones too, families, kids. A lot of them had careers. They were doing things, and all of a sudden they've got to go put themselves in a combat situation. And very few of them have to do that. America doesn't give a goddamn about Iraq. We really don't. The only people who care about what happens in Iraq are the families of the soldiers that are forced to go there. Oh, I know. It's an all-volunteer army. Yeah, okay, right. So Americans just don't care. We would rather just block it all out. We don't want to hear about it. We don't want to hear about these predator drones. We don't want to hear about any more civilians in 20s and 30s and 40s being blown into red mist because some freak sitting at a stateside airbase pushes a button and a drone 10,000 miles away sends a missile into a house. We don't hear about that. We just don't want to hear about it. And we damn sure don't want to hear about the suicides that are on target, no pun intended there, they're on target to be the worst year. I mean, soldiers who come back or while they're still in a combat zone and stick the barrel of the rifle in their mouth and pull the trigger. We don't want to hear about that. That's nothing to do with us. I mean, my God, we've gone 7 years without even seeing coffins, pictures of coffins come home. We don't want to hear this stuff. This is horrifying. How did we get into this position? What are we doing at this late stage in American history? I know the standard answers. American empire, we're scrounging for resources. I know all that. And that's insanity. That's crazy talk. Why are we doing this? Why aren't we home? We have military personnel in how many countries? 110, 38, 69, 70, you know, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. But there's no money to take care of, kids who don't have health care. There's no money to send to the state so these kids can get their shots or get a visit to the doctor or get their throat swabbed or, you know, I mean, Jesus, God in heaven, what? And then these reports about the soldiers who are killing themselves and killing other Americans when they come home. I realize it's a small percentage. I'm not suggesting that soldiers are coming back and just picking up or taking their weapon with them and killing people on the subway. But it's enough that it's got the Army's attention, and the Army hasn't changed in 100 years. You know, they'll do a report and then deny what the damn report says. That's the Army way. You know, we don't care what don't believe what your eyes show you. You're going to believe that nonsense or you're going to believe me? Your eyes will lie to you. I will tell you the truth. Right? You know how it goes. It's a shame. Let's see if our phones are working. Mary is in Morrison, Illinois. Can you hear us, Mary?
Hi, yes, I can. Good evening.
Oh, great. Hi, Mary.
Hey, Mike, maybe I'm slow and I just kind of learned this, but I didn't know that the United States had signed on to build a nuclear power plant across the street from Iran in the United Arab Emirates. And, well, signed off on this. Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead.
And Bush started it, and then Obama had to kind of finalize it, and he signed off on it on May 20th. Mm-hmm. And as long as Congress doesn't object within 90 days, it becomes law. Well, the 20th will be in August, and Congress isn't even in session. Now, I called a couple senators, and I got no comment.
Well, they probably don't know what in the world you're talking about. It was George Bush who the Wall Street Journal reported in June of 2008. I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago that. Bush was helping Saudi Arabia build nuclear weapons in that country. You know, this is a country that is three times the size of Texas, has more than 300 days of blazing sun a year, largest oil reserves on Earth, and they're being given nuclear power, not solar power. You know, what is up with that? You see? Yeah, you would think that somebody in the House and the Senate would take some interest in it, you know? Right.
One of the offices, when I called them last
week, said no comment. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I just like to point about Iran having a nuclear power plant, but where did you get their neighbors was? I guess the difference is the Iranians are, you know, we don't like the Iranians, or the Bush crime family doesn't, but the Bush family has been doing business with the Saudi family for, you know, a couple of generations. Yeah, well, there you go. Hey, Mary, I gotta leave you there. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Stay with us. About 10 before the hour. Where are we? Colas. Colas is calling from Wilmington, Delaware. Is it Colas?
It's Colin.
Colin.
Yeah, the O is silent.
Yes, sir. Oh, so it's Clint?
It's Colin. It's like Colin.
Colin. Oh, well, the O isn't really silent, is it? The O isn't really silent. If I say it Colin, it's pronounced like ah, right? I mean, if the O in your name was silent, it would be Clin, right? Well, no, if it C-O-L-I-N, Colin, because there's an O in there, Yeah, right. Well, I got that part, but it's not silent. If your name is Colin and you say, well, the O is silent, then your name would take the O away. It'd be C-L-I-N. How do you pronounce that? Clin. Well, no, if you take away the O, if you take the O out, how do you spell your name? Well, how do you spell your first name? Go ahead, spell it for me. Yeah.
O.
Yeah. All right. Take the O out and spell it for me again. Are these too hard for you?
No, it's not too hard for
me. Okay. All right. How do you pronounce that?
I pronounce it Colin.
You know you're making me crazy, but go ahead, Clin or Colin. What did you call in about, Colin? Uh-huh.
It's actually kind of crazy because I've never heard you before.
Yeah.
I'm a
conservative. No! Well, you're not allowed to call me, Clint. You can't call the... Who gave you permission to call this program?
Well, the lady that I was talking to before.
Well, hold on a minute. Will you open up your mic, please? Did you give this man permission to call?
I did a bad, bad thing.
Did you give him permission? All right, Clin, we're getting rid of her. Listen, you're not allowed to call if you're conservative. You have got to be either a Mormon or a liberal. Are you either one of those? Oh, man. You're a 26-year-old what? Caucasian. You're from the Caucasus?
I'm actually from Michigan.
Michigan. Well, that's not the Caucasian. That's not the Caucasus mountains or. She's not a white male. About things that concern female Latinos, yeah. All right, listen, I've really enjoyed talking to you, but I'm going to have to bail out, Clem. This is, I don't know, there's something wrong with our, we'll try to get it fixed over the break, but I've got about 10 emails here that says they can't hear the callers. Do you have any idea what's going on? Do you have any idea, engineer? Well, I'll be damned. Something with the mixing board. I wish we had a consulting engineer. Not that I don't think that your engineer prowess is right up to snuff. But yeah, a lot of people writing in. The callers are not coming through. Well, geez, but that's not true with everybody. Michael in Roswell is hearing him, or was hearing him. One of our listeners in LA is hearing him. Oh well. You want to try one more? Let's try again. Let's see if we. No! We can't have any of that. No! Okay, let's try it one more time. Michael, I hear you. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if anyone else can. I don't know if anyone else can hear you. We had some horrible problems with this filthy, degenerate AT&T over the past couple 3 days. I wish there was some other phone company available for what we need because they are just rotten. But
before I get to the reason my calling, let me confirm also that during the time that I've been on hold. I could hardly hear the other callers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, apparently folks who are listening online can hear with no problem. Folks that are listening via Sirius or XM or radio stations are having some trouble here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, damn. Well, I'm not sure what's
wrong.
I hope
you're not being illegally wiretapped.
Up.
Yikes. I heard that.
Yeah. All right, listen, let me put you on hold for a second. Let's go ahead and take a break, Kathy, and see if we can figure out what the hell is going on here. And we'll come back after the break and try again. If we can't get it straightened out, we'll just do we're going to have to deal without taking calls because apparently people on the internet can hear it fine. People listening to the broadcast over the air can't. So we'll see if we can fix it. Sorry. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Gosh, I hope we're not having a telephone meltdown here. That would be awful, wouldn't it? All right, here's what we're going to do. If you will indulge me, where are we? Michael, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Everything sounds fine. Now, if I can get a couple of listeners, God, this just sounds like high school radio. Kathy's not going to touch anything. If I could get a couple of listeners to say whether or not they can hear Michael. Michael, say hi again. Talk to me a minute.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
If you can hear Michael and me, without distortion, is Michael's voice loud? You know, this is what happens, and I apologize, but this
can
is.
Can I try something else, Mike?
Don't play any musical instruments, Michael.
No. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, testing 1, 2, 3. Are you kidding? This is what happens when your operation is out in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, and you're kind of stumbling along, and, Kathy's engineering skills are skills she's picked up on her own. Somebody send me an email quickly, if you don't mind. Can you hear me? Can you hear Michael? If you're listening on the air, or if you're listening on the internet, if you will indicate that, we certainly would appreciate it. All right. And while we're waiting for those emails, Michael, you called because...
I am particularly outraged at the Sonia Sotomayor hearings. You know, let me tell you something. I'm going on vacation in 2 weeks, which I can't wait for. And after hearing what's been going on for the past 3 days, Lord knows I need a vacation. You know, I don't know what the hell is going on with these Republicans. They keep,
Yeah, it's starting to distort again. Damn. All right, go ahead.
Can I continue?
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Okay. You know, first off, they keep going on with this wise Latina thing for like 3 days in a row. And on the first day, she already made it clear of what her intentions were. I don't know why they keep revisiting that issue. There are other issues that they should be touching base on. This has become an absolute circus.
That's because they're Republicans. It's
yeah.
Because all they're trying to do is embarrass the candidate, trying to embarrass, the Democratic Party.
They're embarrassing the entire nation is what they're doing. I mean, I recall this was supposed to be a civil, professional, cordial, and respectable hearing, and it's been anything but that. Can I touch based on another part of the hearing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it was Lindsey Graham that went down the list of people's negative feelings towards Sotomayor, saying that she's abusive, she's nasty,
right.
She has a very bad temper. I mean, when he went down this list, I'm wondering if he's really focusing on Sotomayor or on another judge in New York. There's another judge in New York by the name of Donna Recant,
mm-hmm.
And she's a Republican, and she's been reported to the New York State Commission of Judicial Misconduct for the very same characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, this is also a woman that was appointed by another Republican rat, namely Rudy Giuliani.
Right.
And she was operating exactly like Giuliani, nasty, anti-law, anti-constitution, and she just treats people like crap.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if Lindsey Graham was just pulling up a whole bunch of these judges, particularly on the right-wing side, and trying to pin these against Sotomayor. You know, I can't put it past these Republicans to be pulling this kind of crap, but I want to know, since Graham brought it up, where the hell are any complaints against Sotomayor to the New York State Commission of Judicial Misconduct? I don't recall there being any.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there were any complaints. Look, Lindsey Graham and what's his name? What's the guy from Coburn, the guy from Oklahoma. Mushmouth, Jeff Sessions, these Republican senators were not the least bit interested in anything about her qualifications or anything about what she's going to do on the bench. They couldn't care less. Anyone to the right of to the left of Robert Bork, to these guys, they just don't want on the court. They want the court to be extreme right wing. And Sotomayor is a kind of middle of the roader. I think she's kind of center right, if anything. But and plus they don't like her because she's female, and they damn sure don't like her because she is not completely white. So
You know, it's another thing, though, Mike. You know, it's another thing that's so interesting. Since they want to keep harping on Wise Latina, and how many years ago was that? A good 10, 15
years
ago?
Yeah, it's...
And Sotomayor has been on the bench since then and has still been issuing rulings based on the law. So it's like, why the hell are they making... And I hope those Republicans are listening out there, because they certainly are presenting themselves as idiots, and I'm just impeaching their credibility. You know, how the hell is he going to keep bringing up about Wise Latina, but then yet her ruling since then has proven that she has always dedicated herself to the law and to the Constitution. You know, stop mixing apples and oranges, and stop trying to make mountains out of molehills, and stop trying to make us look stupid, because we're not.
That sounds good to me, Michael. All right, thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate it. And thanks to everybody who has emailed. All right, the consensus now, Kathy, is everything is working fine on XM, on Sirius, on KTLK, and on the internet, and whatever other radio stations folks are listening to. I'm saying KTLK because I got a couple from KTLK, but everything seems to be okay now.
Now, if our conspiracy theorists will call in and let us know whether or not their dental fillings and their tinfoil hats are picking up the program correctly, then we're all set. You know who you are.
I have an email. Do you have another live mic in the room? Are you recording the program and maybe have that device spotted up on the board? No, we're not doing any of that, are we?
Well, again, the conspiracy theorists who are out there, if you would please just, you know, tweak your antenna, get the pipe cleaners adjusted.
What? All right, AM 950 on the internet. No, everything seems to be okay now. Let's hope it stays that way. Thanks to everybody who took the time to email in on that.
It's 25 cents a show. What do you want?
Well, if it were free, we could just say to hell with it. But it's not free. It costs 25 cents a program for the podcast. Can you imagine somebody who subscribes and they get the podcast? Well, I don't know. Do you hear all that distortion on the podcast? I guess you would, wouldn't you? Oh, geez. Jim is calling from Burlington, Iowa. Hey, Jim.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
All right. I just kind of want to reiterate on the previous caller.
Okay.
You know, I'm kind of disenfranchised about our process. You know, I always thought that when a confirmation hearing was going on for a Supreme Court justice, that, you know, it's a deliberate, objective, kind of, you know, serious thing. But,
sure.
You know, what I want to know is, why don't we have elections to nominate our senators and congressmen and then let the public have a confirmation hearing with them, you know, so we can ask people like, well, Mr. Hansen, do you have any, you know, concubines down in Argentina or you know, Lindsey Graham, you know, people like that just asking questions that pertain to their misgivings and their shortcomings.
Well, I know, but you know, the quick answer to that, Jim, would be that judges when they get to this level, they're appointed and or nominated anyway, and the people don't have a chance to determine the qualifications. That's what our elected representatives are supposed to do, and they just, you know, they just do a lousy job of it. But I hear what you're saying. All right, Jim, I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
our Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Email from John. This subject line says, greetings from your hometown of Toledo, Ohio. Mike, I've been listening to your show in one form or another for about 2 years and have recently become a subscriber. Big fan. Listened to both to your show and also Tom Hartman's show and find that both programs complement each other. Tom's program approaches the issues of the day from an intellectual standpoint, and you approach the issues from a more emotional standpoint. Oh, really? Anyway, John writes, I have lived in the Toledo area since 1976. I'm currently working in downtown Toledo as the finance manager of Goodwill Industries of Northwest Ohio. The depression we're going into has hit Ohio very hard, particularly Northwest Ohio. The official unemployment rate in Toledo is 12%. When you add in those people who have run out of unemployment benefits, the actual unemployment rate is probably around 15% or more. Social service spending by the state is being slashed significantly. The only thing that is saving our butts here at Goodwill Industries is the fact that our used goods retail stores are doing somewhat better during this depression due to people becoming more cost conscious. Sean, yeah, I would imagine that you shop at that place called Last Chance store, the consignment store. Well, it's not consignment store. What is it? What do you call it? Thrift store. Have you noticed more people in there?
Well, they just moved, so I think their regular crowd hasn't found them yet. About the same, I would have to say.
Well, good.
Is this what we're going to talk about for the rest of the night? Because, I mean, I have lots of favorite consignment stores. I've got one for Molly that's called Kid to Kid out in Stone Mountain.
No, I'm talking about the, not the consignment stores, but the thrift stores. They're great places to shop. They really are. I don't know why more people don't. No, actually, I wish people would stay the hell away so that, you know, all the good bargains could be glommed up by the Malloy family. I don't know what to make of this story. I got this off the BBC's website, but it's you can get it from AP, I'm sure. American troops are not going to be banned from smoking in war zones. That's according to U.S. Department of Defense. Now, the reason they have to state that is because there was a recent study which recommended that the U.S. military should be tobacco-free, right? However, a Pentagon spokesman now says U.S. troops were already making enough sacrifices in Iraq and Afghanistan. The spokesman, Jeff Morrell, said Robert Gates, U.S. Defense Secretary, did not want to add to the stress of the troops by taking away the right to smoke. But Mr. Morrell said the Pentagon would examine the recent study to see what else could be done to move toward banning tobacco in the military. He said, quote, obviously it's not our preference to have a force that is using tobacco products, end quote. The Institute of Medicine, what the hell is that? Never heard of that. Said 30% of Army personnel are smokers, leading to, quote, very high economic and health costs, end quote. However, everybody is acknowledging it's going to be very difficult to introduce a change, as smoking, according to the report, quote, has long been associated with the image of a tough, fearless warrior, end quote. Let's see. The report commissioned by the Pentagon, U.S. Veterans Affairs Department, said the Pentagon spent more than $1.6 billion every year on tobacco-related medical care, hospital treatment, and lost days of work. It said that rates of tobacco smoking in the military had increased since 1998, maybe as high as 50% among service personnel returning from duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, the The killer tobacco industry loves that. I've got several posters made from full-page ads in magazines from back in the early 40s. One of them has Ronald Reagan endorsing Camel cigarettes for Christmas gifts. But these posters show soldiers smoking, and with the recommendation that, or the acknowledgement that the tobacco companies are sending free cigarettes to our fighting men overseas as they fight against the Nazis and the Japanese. I don't know. Cigarette smoking in a combat zone seems almost nonsensical to even talk about it, except for the fact that when these soldiers come back, not only do they bring back PTSD, but they bring back all the diseases that come from tobacco. Man, it's these guys can't win, can they?
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Lauren writes, regarding smoking in the military, Lauren writes, several years ago I was involved with an anti-smoking group trying to get our city to make public places non-smoking. The Legion, which is equivalent to your Veterans Association, she's writing from Canada, raised the biggest stink, insisting that our soldiers had fought for the right to smoke. Oh, my God. At one forum, I pointed out that the last time our boys had fought for freedom was World War II, that these men were in their 80s, at least, and many of them suffering from respiratory diseases made worse by cigarettes. The ban on smoking passed. But the veterans, mainly peacetime ones, a few from the Korean conflict and some from Afghanistan, acted like this was so unpatriotic. I don't know. I'm reformed. Is that the right word? I quit smoking 7 years ago. And I've said before, you know, you never know when you smoke for a lot of years like I did and then you quit. You never know when throat cancer or lung cancer or whatever is going to show up. I asked my doctor about getting a lung scan, and he said, I'd be more worried about your heart. Jesus. But that, you know, we were in my age cohort, we were taught, I don't think, well, I know kids are not taught now that smoking is cool. They still see the smoking billboards and things, and not so many of those unless you get unless you get to minority neighborhoods. Then you see all sorts of smoking billboards. But you know, my group was brought up. I can remember in Life magazine, Look magazine, they used to have commercials. They would have a, I don't know if it was really a doctor or an actor. Or I mean a model, but it'd be Dr. Jim Smith, and he would have a cigarette in his hand, and he would say, I recommend Camel cigarettes for your T-zone. And then they would have a T superimposed over the person's jaw and throat. I recommend smoking Camels for your T-zone. And I just, you know, when I was a kid, I figured there's a T-zone. Is that what that is? That's a T-zone. Well, that's where you get mouth cancer, oral cancer, throat cancer, cancer of the larynx, cancer of the tongue. But I remember commercials for Lucky Strikes, the number one choice of oral surgeons. Or I'm sorry, number one choice of surgeons. So we were brought up to really see smoking as American, cool, good stuff, don't ever stop, yada, yada, yada. At one time, I was married to a woman who worked at MCV, Medical College of Virginia, in Richmond. This is 1,000 years ago. And she worked in the radiation department. And I would go to pick her up every afternoon about 5 o'clock. And some days she would come out at, you know, 5 after 5, some days later. And one of the days she came out about 5:30, she said, "Oh, my God, what? Well, we had a patient who had come down for radiation therapy, this machine called a Betatron, I think, where they, now this is a long time ago, 45 years ago, they would lay you under this machine and zap you with radiation. And I said, "Well, what happened?" She said, "Well, she had a tracheostomy, a tube in her throat, through which she breathed. And she wasn't hooked up to oxygen or anything. She just had to have this tracheostomy tube, piece of plastic. And it went through a hole in her throat to bypass her larynx. She had cancer larynx." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Yeah, she was sitting there waiting to go into the radiation room smoking a cigarette." Now, they allowed smoking right in the hospital where they were giving radiation treatment for smoking diseases. Anyway, the woman was sitting there, and she would hold her cigarette up to that plastic opening in her throat, little plastic tube, and suck in, you know. And the what? A stoma? Is that what you call that plastic thing? She would suck the smoke in through the stoma. And my wife at the time said, "Yeah, I was sitting there at my desk, and all of a sudden this woman started what for her was coughing. God only knows what it sounded like. And her stoma came flying out across the room and landed under her desk." And so immediately, you know, everybody is looking for the stoma and trying to get it and get it back in her throat. So I'm laughing. Good God, I don't know why I'm laughing. So she could breathe. Well, this is right about the time when the Surgeon General's report came out. What was it, 1966, about smoking? There's no longer any doubt. Here's the irony. Both the woman I was married to and I were smokers at the time. And my wife would sit there at her desk with a cigarette. She smoked Marlboros. She would sit there at her desk with a cigarette. And the doctors, the surgeons smoked. It was awful. It was just horrifying. Thank God my kids don't smoke. But anyway, like I said, I stopped about 7 years ago. And there's nothing worse than listening to a reformed smoker. Really, I just, you know, I can't, especially if you're struggling to quit and somebody else says, "Oh, well, you ought to stop that." Well, no kidding. You know, if I'm a heroin junkie, I ought to stop that too. But you know what? Stopping heroin is easier than stopping nicotine. I think that's without a doubt now. I just got to the point where it was like, Kathy and I were trying to get pregnant, and I kept thinking, "Well, Jesus God, at my age, if we do get pregnant, and you know the kid's 2 years old, all of a sudden I develop a heart attack or throat cancer or lung cancer, that's stupid." So I stopped. And the part that was so weird to me, it just infuriated me, was how easy it was to quit. You know, with help. You know, I used those patches. I used the nicotine patches. And then went to nicotine gum. And how easy it was, I think within 2 weeks, completely gone. I couldn't believe it. After all those years. All those years. Jesus, God. So now the Pentagon has recommended that soldiers be weaned from cigarettes. And we have a smoke-free military. Okay. Rotten Bill is calling from New Jersey.
Yeah. Hey, still being held captive in South Carolina.
Oh, that's right. You're in South Carolina, not New Jersey.
Right.
Right.
I just wanted to preface that you're still my superhero.
Oh, well, okay.
Green Lantern, the whole bit. But I spent 10 years in the Navy.
Yeah.
7 months of which was in Tonka Gulf. And thing about smoking in the military is it's one of the few things left you can control when everything's getting out of control. Like the guy said in the movie, it's going to get out of control and be lucky to live through it.
Yeah.
but there's something in that burning ember, you know, mm-hmm. it's like harkens back to the caveman days where we gathered around the fire and some comfort, you know, where we cooked our meals and stuff like that. And I smoke at night. I guess you could call me a part-time smoker. But it's like I say, it's one of the few things left you can control, and I hate it. I want to get rid of it. I want to quit it. But, you know, all the stuff that you talk about, we don't have much control over. But when you light a cigarette, you can control how much you want to smoke, if you can put it down, you know, all that sort of thing. But,
well, that's kind of the illusion. And uh-huh. Bill, thanks. I'm starting to get some distortion here again. Let me disconnect the call. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. I think what you're describing is the same illusion that I used to have, that I had some control over it. I didn't have any control over it. Nicotine, you know, I don't know why I'm talking about cigarettes, dear God. We don't talk about this kind of stuff on this program, but Reg just sent me a copy of that magazine ad I was talking about. More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. And there's a guy sitting there with the white coat on. The doctor's choice is America's choice. For 30 days, test Camels in your T-zone. T for throat, D for taste. Jesus God. Yeah, that's it. That's the ad, all right. Oy.
T for tumor.
T for tumor. That's what the T stands for. But no, I'll never forget the day that pediatrician up in Chicago said, Mr. Malloy, you have a lump right here in your throat. You know, it turned out to be a thyroid nodule that, you know, I had cut out. But, you know, when you hear that, you think about all those years, you thought, well, yeah, okay, only 1 out of 10 smokers get some kind of cancer. Yeah, right. But why are we talking about this? I have no idea. I'm sorry. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Pontiac's summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the 5-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st. See dealer for details. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew tonight, the usual gang of bandits. We appreciate you all. And thanks for your patience tonight when we had the trouble with the volume, the sound. Hopefully we have solved it. But I doubt it. It'll come back again. Dave is in Chicago listening on Sirius. Hey, Dave.
How's it going, Mike? You guys were talking about thrift stores and the like. A little bit earlier, I thought I could shed some quick light on it. You know, being a truck driver, I drive 48 states, and every time I see a Goodwill store, I like to stop in and see if there's any electronic goodies around.
Uh-huh.
And traffic is way up. Not only that, pawn shops, you know, as you would expect. I don't know if you saw that. If you saw that Maxed Out film, 2006.
No, I didn't see that.
A large part of the film, they talk to a pawnbroker, and he talks about how people walk in and tell him their troubles and why they've got to drop off whatever objects they're dropping off for money.
You know? Uh-huh,
so
uh-huh.
Pawn shops, Goodwill shops, thrift shops, parking lots are full, and the bargains are plentiful. So.
Well, you know, even before we had to dial back on whatever spending we did, we've always shopped at these thrift stores or consignment shops for Molly. Not always. I mean, sometimes, you know, I don't want to give the impression she's 5 years old, never had new clothing. But, you know, when a kid is like 2 and 3, to buy new clothing for a child that's growing that quickly and does the things that a toddler does is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
You know,
my granddaughter's 8 years old, and she's the biggest kid in school.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter is constantly buying clothes like that because it just doesn't pay to buy brand new clothes. She's going to grow out in 3 months.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what makes Kathy's day is not when the phones work properly. Here's what makes Kathy's day: when she goes to this thrift store, like Last Chance, and she'll find a pair of Calvin Klein jeans that have never been worn. There's still a tag in them, and she can get them for $6.
That's the mother load.
Yeah, that's it. Kathy, you know, for the rest of the week, Kathy is sedated. So, all right. Thanks, Dave. Take care, all right? Appreciate you checking in. You know, that's true. Huh? Right?
I have found some of the best bargains. I've found Ann Taylor dresses that have never been worn. I found a lot, and you have to say this too, because kids grow so fast. A lot of people buy clothes for the kids. They never wear them. I get a lot of Molly's stuff, brand new with tags, at a consignment store or a thrift store, and a lot of her stuff still has tags on it because, you know, parents buy stuff, and
they
outgrow it before they ever get them on.
I agree. You know, I'm a great believer in thrift stores, so-called. Let's get off this. Steve is calling from Portland. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Mike, I feel a little like the high school baseball coach who goes out to the mound to talk to the star pitcher when he's walked three guys and given up two home runs. I listened to the speech today. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I listened to the speech today, and this is why this guy is so dangerous, because he doesn't do a goddamn thing, but when the faithful start to falter and, you know, kind of fall off the wagon, he gets out there and makes a rousing pep talk, and he'll continue to do nothing, but every so often he'll come out and he'll give one of these rousing speeches. I think we need to wake up to this.
Well, I don't think anybody except the terminally brain dead would forget the fact that Obama has done some things or not done some things that puts him in the same category as Bush, and lose sight of that because he gives a great speech to the NAACP convention or he gives a great speech on health care. Look, he's a pretty gifted guy where it concerns speaking, public speaking. God knows he's a good politician, but as far as fulfilling the things that we thought he was going to do, yeah, he's been. I wouldn't call him dangerous. I might call him a failure. I might call him somebody who we thought promised something and didn't fulfill the promises.
Well, here's where I disagree with you, Mike. I don't think he's a failure. I think he's doing exactly what he was hired to do. He's doing precisely what he was hired to do. So he's not a failure, not in his own lights anyway.
Right.
He never intended to do health care. He never intended to stop the war. He never intended to stop domestic spying. He never intended to do anything other than to bail out the corporations and let the rest of us sink. That was the game plan.
Well,
so he's not a failure.
Yeah. Well, I'm not quite ready, Steve, to take it. Yeah. You may be right. Maybe you're right. I'm not ready to take it to that level, though. That he never intended this or he never intended that. I think his history would indicate that yes, he did intend to do things now, and maybe he still will. at some point in his presidency, although there are certain things that it's looking pretty dodgy right now. But I don't think he ever, you know, sat down with some kind of power in this country and said, look, I can put a different face, and I don't mean that literally, I can put a different face on the presidency. I'm young, I'm a great speaker, I can do this, I can do that, and so let's go ahead and screw the American electorate. I just don't think that kind of a conversation happened. I really don't. Maybe it did. Thanks, Steve. But I don't think so. I just don't think so. Oh, my. Is the show over? We're finished? I guess we are. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Your child this